The Education Finance Division will come back to order. And thank you, members, for coming here. And I realize that this is an evening that many of you had other plans for, so I apologize for that. But I would like to take the testimony on Senator Clark's bill. And I believe, Senator Clark, do you have maybe an amendment or
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. And I know that all of you are rooting for St. Cloud Tech over Hopkins right now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, my son is at that game, and we are rooting for Hopkins.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, from what I understand,
there is a difference between boys and men in this particular game. really great boys. Anyways, Mr. Chair,
we
does staff see. Have our amendments?
Mr. Chair, does anyone know where Sabika won this afternoon?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Somebody was supposed to tell me.
I'm not so sure we should have had this meeting the way it's going.
Mr. Chair, I thought we could have a good morale activity. And Senator Bonhoff and I could have gotten rooted together for really good people.
I'm not so sure we actually have the amendment yet.
Mr. Nauman,
oh,
do we have
do.
It?
Oh, we do. Okay.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chair, is that the A5 amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
If we could, Mr. Chair, if we could do that, as it's being passed out, and I just wanted you to know, as we were just trying to address a couple of things that came up today, Senator Olson very astutely realized that that one particular clause was, after many people had worked on one sentence, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. So, but we also decided we should fix a couple of different things. And so as you see the amendment, the first part down through 1.12 is mostly trying to address Senator Olson's concern, and what it does is it deletes lines 22 to 24, which is that sentence that didn't make a much sense and was really in two different parts anyways. And so it deletes that, and then it takes the second part of that one of the things that was important there was talking about reflecting the diversity of family values and cultural heritage representing the community. We thought that was important to keep in. So that's actually been moved down into number 6. You'll see that on lines 1.10 and 1.11. The other thing that, because she caught that, caught Senator Bonhoff in my eyes, was that the caucus, the Early Childhood Caucus, had wanted to make sure that we were reinforcing with all of this our goal that's about ensuring that all children are fully ready for kindergarten by 2020. So we just made sure that was kind of a little slip up, so that's in there. Then on page 4, so I think that should fix the concern and make it clear. It should make clear that the office is about public funds, not touching anything that doesn't take public funds. And then we want lots of choices for families. And then on page 4, we believe that inherently that this is voluntary, but for some comfort language, if you look on page 4, line 16 after the period, so then on the amendment, which is lines 1.17 to 1.19, we're adding, if a program or provider chooses to participate, the program or provider will be rated and receive public funding associated with the rating. We think that clarifies that if you want to be in, you can, and if then you will be rated accordingly. And then the Senator Saxhog amendment about the allowances inserting a task accounting is on 1.20 and on the backside, and then we have that with regard to the allowances, we got legal advice that we should be putting the transfer of the duties to make sure the office actually was able to do the functions for which we were creating it.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A5 amendment.
Senator Clark moves the A5 amendment. Any questions on that? And all right. On the A5 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay, Senator Clark.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think we were in a good spot to be starting some of the testimony, and I know that we have Judy Halper is here, but she cannot stay for long, so perhaps okay. If we could start with her.
that would be good. Please come up and give your name for the record, please.
I'm Judy Halper. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Jewish Family and Children's Service. Thank you very much. I'm here today to talk in particular about the component of this bill that speaks to the scholarship. Jewish Family and Children's Service is a multi-service agency in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. We serve over 13,000 people a year of all backgrounds. And one of our programs is the Parent-Child Home Program, which is a home visiting program that provides literacy and school readiness to children age 2. And it's a two-year program, so you have to be 18 months to 2 years to begin it, and it completes in 2 years. And the program is designed to both create literacy in the children and school readiness, as well as reinforce that the parents are the primary educators of their children. And in order to be eligible for this program, you have to be both, your family has to be both low-income and low-educated. This program has been around since the 1960s. It was begun in New York, and it is now found throughout the United States, but Jewish Family and Children's Service brought it to Minnesota 2.5 years ago, and we are the only site with this program in the state of Minnesota. I'd be happy to tell you more about the program, but I know how long your day has been, so I won't go into greater detail, but we'll be happy to take your questions. The thing that is unique about the bill and how it will impact our families is that we are already receiving and have received since we started this program private funding, both from individuals and corporate foundations. And as recently as a couple weeks ago, one of the corporate foundations that supports this program indicated that if our graduates, and those would be four-year-olds, 3.5 to 4-year-olds, if our graduates could then go on to another stream that would prepare them for school, then this foundation would be very interested in providing the private dollars to bring this program up to scale. We're currently serving a modest 40 families a year. So we think this would be a very good thing for the state of Minnesota to support, as it would really, the scholarships would really leverage support from the private foundations to really maximize what we can provide to young children in terms of school readiness. I just want to mention that Senator Bonhoeff has been following this program since we began it 2.5 years ago and has been very supportive and has been looking for ways that we could create a private-public partnership. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you what I think is a very successful program. I should mention that there's nearly 50 years of research that has been conducted on this program by the home site, again, in Port Washington, New York. And what they have found is that children who participate in this program graduate from high school at the same rate as their middle-class peers, just by virtue of having had this two-year program. So it's a very exciting program. We're thrilled to be hosting it in Minnesota. Hope we can do a lot more. And that's my presentation.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Ms. Halper, for being here. She's an old friend of mine, but one who I admire greatly and whose work is really making a difference around the Twin Cities. I just want to make sure that members understand that I don't know if you're at liberty to say which private company is funding you, but so this company has already given them some money for this parent home program and is willing to give a great deal more money if they know that when they've finished their work with them, there's another place for them to go before they start kindergarten. And so by us extending our allowances to these at-risk children, then now the corporation can see they don't just fall off, that somebody's still watching them and making sure they're in quality care. And so I think that's exactly the kind of model we're talking about, where she's not here asking for money, but rather to be able to show the foundation community that, you know, there is a structure. The state is providing a structure for these at-risk kids to go forward. So I think it speaks to the good work that we're doing here, but also the importance and the power of leveraging corporate support. Thank you.
Senator Bonhoff, I hesitated in saying the name of the corporate foundation just because I don't have a promise from them, but you are absolutely accurate that this has been the hurdle that they have thrown in front of us. They do that. The foundation is the Cargo Foundation, which has been supporting school success programs at Jewish Family and Children's Service for over 15 years. And when we started the parent-child home program, and we're in our third year now, they have been watching closely, and they are very interested, and we had a meeting with them about a month ago in which they said, gee, we'd really like to see the graduates get connected into a stream that ensures that they will be school ready. And so it's a bit of a challenge. It's a bit of a carrot on the end of the stick, but we are very excited about, we have a site visit coming up with them, and to be able to say that that there's some potential for us to maximize the scholarships that are available in this bill, and to have that be the next step for our graduates would be something very positive to report.
Thank you. Any other questions that members have?
Okay. And Mr. Chair, as you're having the next person come up, I just want to reinforce that that obviously means that those children would be utilizing a variety of opportunities. It would not be going to one particular place. I mean, you're not looking for funding to go to a particular center, and so that it kind of reinforces what we've been trying to do all along.
Let's see. Do you want to I have a list here. Do you want me to just work my way down?
We know a couple people probably weren't able to get back, so.
Okay. Yeah, I know that could be a problem. Is it Karen Kelly, Gary Woola?
She was not able to come. I think we were getting her comments to give to all of you. She apologizes. She was coming to support what we're doing.
Todd Otis?
Yes.
Here. And as Todd comes up, we have a verbal amendment that I think we can make.
Mr. Chairman, this would be to the A5 amendment. As interesting as it would be to transfer all positions in the Department of Education to the Office of Early Learning, I think we actually intended it to be just the early childhood positions. And so with your permission, I would recommend after line 1.26 adding the following, associated with early childhood education programs and financing.
And, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment about the quality of our staff. They're really remarkable.
We would like the commissioner to be part of this, too. But,
I think it would be very interesting to put high school into an early childhood framework. But, you know, for those of us who have had teenagers, there are some similarities. yes, Mr. Chair, I would certainly move that oral amendment. And I think we already incorporated the A5 into.
Yes, we did. So on Senator Clark's amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. All right. Mr. Otis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Otis. I'm president of Ready for K. Ready for K is a 7.5-year-old nonprofit organization made up of both early childhood people and community leaders. On our board, we have former Governor Al Quie and former Mayor of Minneapolis Don Fraser, and a new rock star of early childhood, Art Rolnick, as well as a number of people from the field who are very conversant with it. Our real mission is simple. We want to improve the number of kids who are ready for K, and we use as our guiding light the state's assessment on that. And we think this bill is a very positive step forward in that direction. The mantra words that we like are reform, resources, and results. And we think that the system needs to be integrated and brought together better, and that needs to be reformed. Clearly, if we're going to have more quality early learning experiences for kids, we need more resources. And we think under the right conditions, those resources are going to lead to good, good results, namely an improvement in the number of kids who are ready for K. So we can start having the kind of results they're having in Itasca County and other places where you do have really good coordination and a high focus on quality. I know I don't have much time, so I'll just make a few brief comments and a couple of suggestions. With regard to reform, this, I think, is a really good piece of legislation, and the area that we like to focus on today is the Office of Early Learning. one of the questions that has yet to really have a good answer is, well, who's responsible for early childhood in Minnesota? In a way, everybody is, but when everybody is, nobody really is. Creating an Office of Early Learning would help answer that question. Whoever the director of it would be responsible for a game plan and all of the provisions that Senator Clark has in her bill. I have just a couple of thoughts for your consideration as you develop this legislation further. We would like it to be an office reporting directly to the governor. We think that that would enhance its importance, and we think that the governor would thereby have a more direct impact and relationship. So I would at least throw that out as a thought for you to consider. Also, one of the interesting and important realities that's occurring is the in the scope of what impacts school readiness beyond the things in Department of Education and Human Services, which is really, really excellent to have, is health, and particularly early childhood mental health issues. So however you structure this and however you may change it, you may want to consider, in light of some of the other activities with regard to health, federal and state, to include them in the picture, not the whole Department of Health, but the people who are dealing with early childhood mental health might be part of the office, too. But we think that's a terrific proposal. Another part of the bill deals with the concept of age 3 to grade 3. Actually, some of this, I think, is going on in some school districts in part. It's a really powerful model. What it does is it helps assure a really good communication and cooperation between the early childhood and the K-12 system. And that link and that bridge is critically important. Actually, having a coherent age 3 to grade 3 program like what Senator Clark is recommending can get terrific results. The Chicago Parent Centers have shown really good results with some really challenged families and kids. And we have now in Minnesota the person who did the evaluation of that, Dr. Arthur Reynolds at the University of Minnesota, who can attest to the real value of trying that. So that encouragement, we think, is a terrific idea. In terms of new resources, we're excited about the notion that even in the face of this serious budgetary challenge, you are considering adding resources to the allowances program. We think that the way you've structured this in the bill, Senator Clark, it is going to assure a significant additional number of kids who are ready for K. The way it has to be spent in quality settings, the freedom of choice that it gives to the parents, and the way it's structured, I think, is going to really lead to good results. And finally, the quality rating system. It's huge. It's great that the actually, I think both chairs on the Senate side of the Early Childhood Caucus are on this committee, Senator Clark and Senator Michelle. And the Early Childhood Caucus is making this a signature issue. It really should be. Quality is probably the most significant and important concept to embrace when we're trying to move forward on improving school readiness and early childhood. So I think the concepts embodied here are good. It's a work in progress. How we make a quality system work in school-based as opposed to child-based are challenges that are still being worked out, but I think that the overall impetus here is huge and really positive. Before I end, I want to just say a word about some issues that don't come to this committee, but I think as legislators, I just have to encourage you to start to re-envision child care. Child care has to be viewed as early education. It isn't in this committee, and I appreciate that fact, but I think that it's really important that this legislature fully grasp the notion that the quality of child care is definitely going to impact school readiness. And so we encourage you strongly to keep that in mind as you vote in on the floor and just in your dialogue with other colleagues. We at Ready for K have tried to work on a part of the early childhood picture that is somewhat unattended to, except for last year when in your legislation there was a provision to fund family, friend, and neighbor care on a pilot basis. The legislature in the 2007 session created six pilots for family, friend, and neighbor care so that they could access other community-based and local resources to improve how they do their care. Now, this is kind of a difficult group. It's the biggest part of the early childhood community in the sense that when they're not at home with their mom and dad or their mom or the dad, this is the kind of care that's the most frequently used in the state, and yet it's the hardest to really impact. So I think Minnesota and you should feel proud that you're one of the first, I think you are the first state in the country to have any legislation impacting FFN. So we're encouraged by the mood and atmosphere about this issue. I know how hard it is. We were here together in the early 80s, Chairman Stump. It's no fun to make cuts. It's no fun to raise taxes. But I hope, given that this constitutes such a small part of the budget right now and has so much payback, the investment is so well documented by people like Art Rolnick, that I just implore you to try to avoid cutting this field. And we know that's what you want to do, and we really wish you well in that effort. So that's all I got on my little mind.
Thank you, Mr. Otis. I do have a question. And could you go back to one of the points that you made was about the early childhood mental health?
Yeah.
And is there how should – we have a shortage in mental health opportunities and options, I think, amongst adult across the nation, let alone in our state.
Right.
How would that be set up? I mean, how do you have any additional ideas?
Well, there are much better people to talk to you about it. I'll give you just a couple of thoughts. I think in Minnesota, actually in the Department of Human Services, with Dr. Glennis Edwall, is doing significant work on screening and then parent training. I think ultimately helping create a model in which parents can be trained to help with their children's mental health would be hugely valuable. So I would encourage you to explore that with DHS. And I also know that within the Department of Health, there's a Minnesota Early Childhood Comprehensive Systems Initiative that's a federally funded initiative that the Department of Health is working on, and I believe that too has a mental health, early childhood mental health component to it. So various departments are working on it. I completely hear what you're saying, that is to say, if you identify an issue and you don't have the resources to help treat it, it's a real problem. But I think early in the game, if there's a way of engaging the parents particularly on things that if they get worse really do become expensive and hard to solve, there can be a big payback. So keeping parents at the center of that picture, I think, is really valuable. And I think it, when you have time and interest, that DHS might be a good source to talk to about that.
Thank you. Senator Therese Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Clark, I have a couple of questions, and maybe Mr. Otis can help us with this because you alluded to it in your testimony. I am very supportive of this effort of creating the Office of Early Learning. I think it's really what we need in the state of Minnesota. But I believe that the language we have in the bill today is really not workable. And
yeah, I
speak because of my experience. I was with the commission when we tried to come up with Ready for K name. And at the time, we had individuals working with the collaboratives and trying to bring these pieces together. What happens with the Department of Human Services and the Department of Education is that they have very clear mandates for the different funding and programming that they are responsible for. We need to bring those pieces together in a very comprehensive, thoughtful way. My fear with this language, Senator Clark, is that we're going to put another layer, another person, that is going to be facing some challenging, very challenging tasks that I don't think this person is going to be able to accomplish, particularly because this person in this language, section one, you're asking that this person report to two commissioners. I would not want to be hired to be this individual. And The reason is that really, you know, we have federal language, state language that these commissioners are responsible for. The staff works with these programs, and then you're asking a third person to become kind of the middle person. I was very excited about the opportunity to come to work with you to really bring all of these individuals together under one office that will respond to the governor in a commissioner capacity. So I couldn't agree more with Mr. Otis that I really don't want to see this person reporting to the commissioners. I don't believe that this person is going to be able to really pull together all of these concepts and really come to us prepared with recommendations on how to move funding, how to advocate for funding, how to take care of, you know, huge gaps that we have. You just described what we have in DHS. In DHS, we have significant programs for newborns. In the Department of Health, we have a fragmentation of programs throughout the state of Minnesota that really need to be brought together into this office, and we need to think carefully about how do we serve kids, you know, 0 to 5, and prepare them for kindergarten. I'm having a hard time, Senator Clark, with this language, and I would like to work with you to strengthen that language and to really amend it so that we put this position in a commissioner capacity so that we can get there before I die.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, you certainly mirror my personal wishes and desires, as well as probably a whole lot of people independently's wishes and desires. But as my husband likes to say, good today is better than perfect tomorrow. Because when Todd said, excuse me, Mr. Otis said 7.5 years at Ready for K, I thought, oh my goodness gracious, time goes very fast. We've been working on these issues a long time. This particular idea of doing it in this way, the governor can choose to do an office on his own. He needs nothing from us. He could make this happen tomorrow. They had asked last year that we hold off, and not that they weren't interested. This particular way of doing this came from somebody not speaking for the administration, but somebody in the administration, as a possibility of it not costing additional resources right now in a time that is very tough and that a model that has worked in another state. And to me, if we could figure out how to move forward together now instead of waiting 2, 3, 4, 7 years, that would be a good thing. But you are saying certainly my own, it's not too hard to fix this, to change that. And if the committee wishes to do that, we can do that. Certainly, I mean, my preference would be as we get through this today and then we go ahead and work on that language. So that's the reason why it's there. I mean, I think being open and flexible and trying to figure out how maybe we can do things sooner rather than later would be good. And I've got to say that the departments have both been very good about helping us with this. It's not like anybody's actually signed off on it right now. So that, I'm being pragmatic, but I agree with you. The reason why health is not in there right now, and actually I knew Mr. Otis was going to say these things, and I encouraged him to do so, because I think it's important that we think about what could be. The caucus decided a while ago to be focusing on the particular, we could go to everything that relates to young children. We could do housing, we could do nutrition, we could do mental health, we could do a wide array of things. And we decided to focus specifically on the early care and learning, knowing that, again, there is some overlap, which is, at one point we were trying to figure out, well, could we, you know, public health, the home visiting nurses, but how do you say, okay, we're going to take one part of the nurses and not the other part of the nurses? And again, a step forward made sense. I think continue to work on language about coordinating with other departments is a good one. There has, as you know, been at times some turf issues between programs or alliances or ways of looking at things. What they found in Pennsylvania is having kind of the at least I would think in the short run, going back and having the lenses of both education and then the wider issues that relates to kids looked at, it was a good thing. So that's why it's in there. I think if we're just rearranging the deck chairs, we're not going to change anything. We just, frankly, got to get past some institutional barriers and some mindset barriers. And so again, I was just being pragmatic. I'm more than happy to make this a cabinet-level decision. Ultimately, the governor has to decide that if he wants that. But I'm just trying to make sure together with a lot of partners that we can keep moving forward. So let's work together on this, and because I agree with you, that would be a good thing.
Just Senator Perez-Ray.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman. I really believe that we need to move in this direction. Senator Clark, you've done a tremendous amount of work for a number of years long before coming here. But the reality, members, is that we really need to restructure this, and we need to understand how these programs work, how they coordinate programs on behalf of kids, how we use our dollars, how we recognize gaps when we have them, and then how do we increase funding? And without having really this umbrella and empowering the individuals who work under this umbrella, this is just not going to happen. So I hope that we have the courage to move in that direction. And I know this is difficult, but we do have the resources. We just need to use the resources in a more efficient way. And this is a great opportunity for us to look at what we have and then begin to move in that direction. And I really hope that we move this into a cabinet position and then that we look at how do we put this umbrella together and begin to put the funding where we need it. And at this point, we cannot do that without having that structure in place.
Senator Bonhoeff and then Senator Rowland.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, I appreciate your comments. And as you were saying them, I actually thought the exact same thing that Senator Clark said, which was I was thinking, well, this is a political reality. You know, are we at the point where there's the political will to have a cabinet position? And I'm not so sure we are. And so I would hate to have us stop in our work because of an obstacle. And I'm open to it. Believe me, I'm certainly open to your suggestion. And if we found out that, you know, the obstacle we imagine isn't there, well, hallelujah. But the one thing that you might not know is that the Department of Health and the Department, and I always get the names, if I don't say it right, I apologize, but and the Department of Education, they have come to the table and worked together with us in partnership, in meetings. You know, if this one saw it this way, this one saw it that way, they got together with us at the table. So I have been very impressed and encouraged that that actually we can work together and that, you know, I know there some of them are in the room today, and so I'm just publicly want to acknowledge the partnership that's been happening over the last several months.
Hey, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the things that a lot of people might have concern about in developing a cabinet with a commissioner is additional bureaucracy and administration and the costs associated with that. And, you know, I think we kind of, we do need some of that. We do need some administration. No one can ever deny that. But we don't want to set up too much bureaucracy here. And I think this position can facilitate and bring together and, you know, not surround themselves with new people, but with existing personnel that we have, and yet focus on the issue of early childhood well-being and families and education. And so, if we have limited resources, I want to get as much of that money into things for kids, programming. And it's kind of like the argument about getting the money into the classroom and making sure that the administration isn't consuming too much of it in our regular schools. And so, we have to be cautious about that during a time when there aren't many resources available.
Thank you, Senator Roman. Any other questions? If not, Ms. Katie Holmes, if you'd please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Katie Holmes. I am the St. Paul Pre-Kindergarten Allowance Coordinator. I work at Resources for Child Caring, and with the Department of Human Services in the City of St. Paul, we administer the allowance program in St. Paul. And I really appreciate being here today. I wanted to tell you a little bit about my experience administering the program for St. Paul in its pilot phase. and just some of my experiences. Thank you. To date, the St. Paul allowances have assisted over 649 St. Paul children to attend around 65 high-quality early childhood programs. And as the allowance coordinator, I have worked with the parents and the providers on a daily basis. From processing applications to making payments to calling parents to talking with providers, I've seen the ins and the outs of the how the program operates and the success that it has had for St. Paul children and families. Having talked to the majority of the parents of these children, the allowance program has offered new options and choice to choose early childhood programs that may not have been financially possible prior to receiving the allowance. Preference and choice of program varies greatly, but often leans toward full-time programming depending on the child and the family needs. Parents can choose part day, full day, transport, no transportation, family child care center, preschool program. The list goes on and on, as there are many high-quality programs in St. Paul. The allowance program empowers parents to choose the program that best fits their child's needs. Along with the children, early childhood programs throughout St. Paul have benefited greatly from the allowance program. Not only are these high-quality programs being recognized as parent-aware rated, but they have high enrollment numbers from allowance families. I've heard countless positive comments from providers regarding having the allowance program in St. Paul. But as a pilot, we've had our fair share of challenges. With economic times, families are foreclosing on their homes and are very hard to locate. The families might apply for the program, and we have to obviously try to find them and to help them with enrollment and so forth, and they're very hard to locate. Parents take time to explore their program options and ask questions, often leading to a lag time before they're enrolled. When a family is awarded an allowance, it's not an immediate enrollment time. The payments don't start immediately. You'll see oftentimes there's a lag as parents try to figure out what are their options. You know, what was the program that they were attending before? Is that the program that they still want to attend? Do they want to make any changes? Were they attending part time and now need full time and now have the possibility of full time? With the financial assistance of the allowance. So I see all this go on and with conversations with the parents of now that they have these options, what are they going to do? And this takes time. This is not something that takes a day. This can take a month or two. So that leads to lag time that was unexpected in the pilot phase of the allowance. Language barriers in St. Paul are constant. With new immigrant populations in St. Paul, I help families that speak around 14 languages on a daily basis, helping them understand not only early childhood programs, but helping them get into programs before kindergarten. Everything from paperwork to phone calls, you name it, is a challenge. And St. Paul has one of the most diverse populations in Minnesota, and this has been definitely a challenge coordinating the allowance program. I've really enjoyed coordinating the allowance program. It's been extremely rewarding, and I'm really proud to have been part of this program, knowing that in September, more St. Paul children will be walking into kindergarten ready. And now as we are kind of ending the pilot phase of the program, my phone is ringing off the hook with parents and providers asking about the future of the allowance program. Currently, we have over 80 families interested in future allowances, and along with 292 children who are currently 3 years old who may be eligible for a second year. And I just believe that this program really demonstrates that St. Paul were on the right track for school readiness.
Hey, thank you very much. It's interesting to hear from the pilot project the experience. Do you think that it'll be easier in this next year, having worked through many of the difficulties of the first year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're really into a good groove. We worked through a lot of everything from just little kinks and what we feel works best and contacting parents and working with providers, and we've got a good flow going, especially working with the language barriers. We We utilize a language line and some outreach workers and how best to work with those parents and help them understand. So we're in a good flow.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about retention. You alluded to it briefly about mortgage foreclosures and people moving about,
mm-hmm.
but has there been enough students that have been retained through the whole program that we're going to be able to get a fairly significant analysis of the benefits of it?
I hope so. We've had a good percentage of those of those children that have maintained the entire year of the pilot program. We have lost some families. They'll apply, and then we just cannot find them again. But they changed their number. Their number is disconnected. Their houses, they've moved, et cetera. So we have lost some, but a good percentage have been throughout us, the pilot, the entire pilot. And I think evidence speaks for itself as at least half those parents are calling wanting another year.
Senator Clark, what was the expectation of the information from the pilots, to be shared, or how is that, or what was the expectation last year when
sure.
that was, or 2 years ago when that was passed?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you may recall that MELF has been the one that's been overall administering and working on the evaluations. They had done I guess kind of the first year report that came back from SRI, which is a nationally renowned evaluation company. The intent would be obviously to be continuing through this year. Part of the thing I think many of us think are so important, especially since we are seeing gains with these the kids that have been participating, is continuing. I mean, our goal obviously is to be making sure we have resources so parents can have their children experiencing good pre-kindergarten educational opportunities. So I've heard from a number of folks, too, that are hoping that we can continue so that their children aren't dropped midstream, and as well as others wanting to come in. And then from a pilot standpoint, the intent is to be getting back to us when they get through the cycle. And one of the challenges is that because of the economy, MELF has had some challenges with continuing to raise the funds at the level that they had been before with their components. So that's one of the things we've been talking about with them. But we're supposed to be getting information back. I think a number of us who have been talking with the way, doing two separate things now, the allowance funding system, they are going to be getting back to us about their recommendations with that. We obviously know some other things. A few of the things that you didn't happen to mention is, I think was inherent in there is the problems with the application process, and that's part of what we're trying to work on. But the other part is the parent-aware evaluation, and which is right now we're testing it off of the allowance families, but it is broader than that. So that we will be getting back from that too as well, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions that members have? Thank you very much, Ms. Olson. Holmes, I'm sorry. Mary O'Brien. Please give your name for the record.
Sure. Senator Stump, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to speak this evening. My name is Mary O'Brien, and I'm my children are alumni of the Hopkins School District, so I apologize, but we're cheering for Hopkins and KU. Just go on the record about that too.
Okay. We'll go ahead and cheer
so, okay. I'm manager of Youth and Family Services Programs for the St. Louis Park Schools. In that capacity, I supervise SLP Pre-K. That's 7 early care and education programs, including the community ed programs of ECFE and school readiness, an IB applicant preschool that's aligned with our district's K-6 IB initiative. So one of our primary centers is an age 3 to grade 3 school, with that program being in that building, and a child care program that provides full-time care for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. This evening I'm here representing the Minnesota Community Education Association, MCEA, as a member of its legislative committee. MCEA really appreciates the concern, interest, and support demonstrated by the Senate for early education and care this legislative session and the leadership that various members of this committee have shown. Regarding Senate File 1649, I'd like to focus on Section 6, the school readiness portion of the bill. MCEA has long been a supporter and provider of school readiness programs throughout Minnesota. The funding for this program, as many of you are already aware, has remained at its 1991 levels. Currently, districts are serving children between 5 to 14 hours a week, with the average class for a 4-year-old at about 7 hours a week. Increase in the number of service hours to 16 would, of course, benefit the children most at risk that school readiness is serving in 339 out of the 342 Minnesota school districts. Currently, districts are receiving an average of $128 per child per year in state funding. Without additional funding, a mandated increase to 16 hours would force programs to serve fewer children. And I know Senator Clark alluded to that this morning, and I really appreciate also her remarks that we would look to get some additional funding into community education in order to meet this 16-hour mandate. But even with the collaborative efforts with other service providers that many school readiness programs do, including Head Start, the dollars can't be stretched any further than they're currently being stretched. I mean, if you look at the number of children that we're serving for $128 per child per year for up to 14 hours a week, that's a pretty good stretch of the dollars. But that's about as far as they can go. Many programs across the state use their school readiness funds to assure that low-income children receive a quality early learning experience for low or no cost. These children come from families who cannot afford a private preschool or childcare and depend on the public school preschools to prepare their child for school success. In smaller districts in greater Minnesota, school readiness dollars often allow for the establishment and maintenance of a preschool program for the community. They are, in the words of many of their coordinators, the only game in town. Tiffany Nelson, the school readiness coordinator in the Rockford Schools, indicates that their program would be unable to serve as many children under a 16-hour requirement. She says that many of the families who are high risk are unable to afford the 5 or 7.5 hour per week option offered in Rockford. So they're currently on tuition assistance, and requests for tuition assistance have almost doubled this year. The monies Rockford receives for school readiness are used primarily to fund these needs. In the Centennial School District, School Readiness Coordinator Pat Golden reports that an increase to 16 hours would cause her district to serve half as many children next fall as they plan to serve with their 4 to 6 hour classes. Marilee Christensen Adams, who is the School Readiness Coordinator in Anoka Hennepin, says that she, as well as many of her fellow school readiness coordinators, and I'll put myself in that group, understand that the proposed increase in hours is based on research about duration and intensity of service making a difference in preparing children for school success. No one denies that. However, as we do in St. Louis Park and many other school districts, Anoka Hennepin leveraged their school readiness funding by working collaboratively with other agencies, especially early childhood special education. Fewer classes that could be offered under school readiness will then mean fewer inclusion opportunities for early childhood special education children. This ripple effect is especially impactful in greater Minnesota, where, as I previously mentioned, the school readiness dollars are often used to provide the only preschool program in town. So, unfortunately, we're seeing that a 16-hour requirement without the attendant increase in funding would result in fewer of Minnesota's youngest learners being most at risk. The Minnesota Community Education Association vision for early education and care aligns with the concepts suggested by Louise Stoney in her work with the legislature's Early Childhood Caucus. This vision encourages a differentiated system of family choice with multiple service options, adequate funding for all service options, investing public funding in serving children most at risk, and quality standards and rating systems appropriate to the scope and nature of each service option. MCEA encourages legislation that promotes standards based on outcome for children. This legislative session, there has been movement toward reducing mandates and conserving dollars. A 16-hour requirement for school readiness programs would be an unfunded mandate that could essentially put some schools-based school readiness programs out of business. I think we can all agree that it's not in the best interests of the state's youngest learners to serve only half of the eligible children and not be able to serve the others. How are we going to make that choice? So we strongly encourage you to just reconsider that 16-hour requirement in the bill.
Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I was sitting here, I was wondering how many hours are required for kindergarten? Because I thought it was about 2.5 hours, which is only 12.5 hours a week. But I'm not sure.
Hour requirement, but the governor's bill.
Two and a half times five, I'm thinking.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Roebling. Senator Clark. I don't know that there is, per se, a requirement. There is a weight in the formula given for kindergarten. And I think right now it's at 6.12, I think. What we have found with the research is that the bare minimum for an effective intensity and durational requirement for early childhood is a minimum of 12 hours a week. If you look around the country, there are many, many, many. I'm not disagreeing with you right now.
I know.
Because I do think we've got the trade-off here. But one of the things, the department originally came forward with 12 hours instead of 16. But that's the bare minimum across the country with the resources that we're talking about here. One of the things that I think in a lot of communities, looking at the allowances and what other ways that you can be blending those resources would be, we can certainly go to 12, but my guess is you're going to hear the same testimony that you just heard now. In some districts, there will be fewer kids served because of this requirement. The language that's in here is trying to help, working with wonderful programs, to make sure that our school readiness dollars are going towards at least, across the board. Lots of districts are doing more hours than that, but across the board are meeting that. So, for example, in a district like Hayfield that may only get $8,900 mm-hmm. because that's all the kids they've got, they're probably only contracting out for one kid, maybe two kids, because that's all the money there is. And so eventually over time, as we're looking at how do we help, all ships rise here, we can look at that. So we could certainly, I would say that unless we can get some additional levy, I think we should go to 12 hours on here, and I think that will be a stretch for some. But our goal is to try to figure out how we can maybe give our school districts some flexibility. I know that we all have gotten a memo from Charlie Kite with regard to it would be great to be able to have some flexibility with doing more early childhood and perhaps all-day kindergarten. So, Senator Roebling, I'm not sure which way you want to go, but I'm quite sure you would have probably said the same thing if it had been 12 hours.
Senator Stump, yes, I would have.
And the department they want to talk about, this language is all the department's language.
Well, let me just ask, under current law, there is no hour requirement for school readiness, is there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is that in the language right here, if this was passed as it is, you'd have to, if you're going to have a school readiness program, you'd have to have 16 hours. And obviously the resources aren't going to be there for as many children, right? Mm-hmm.
Senator Stump, that's in talking with the field, that's what it appears. The average class, school readiness class right now is about 7 hours. And so, and that's with, as I mentioned, stretching those dollars and working collaboratively and using a wide variety of ways to get to 7 hours for as many children as possible. So with an increase in hours, just about doubling the hours, without any additional funding, the question that has come back from the field that I've heard is, one, we'll just have to significantly revamp what it is we're going to do in the fall. And I know we have people on our waiting list for next fall already. We have people who want to be in our school readiness program, and I think we're not unusual in that regard. And I think the second issue will be, how do we make that choice of which children we serve? You know, we have school readiness programs pretty much across the state, especially in the larger school districts, have significant waiting lists. So there are kids that, you know, you have to make kind of that Sophie's choice, which one's coming in, which one isn't. And so I think, as you know, as we're looking at serving as many children and getting everybody ready for kindergarten, you know, and I don't think anybody doesn't want that. The question becomes, you know, if there are no additional resources, are we better off letting the programs do the kinds of work that they've been doing right now, and continuing to support that and hoping that there will be additional dollars to go in and people moving forward? Or do we make the choices, as Senator Clark says, we'll just have to say, let's just, you know, put it in at 16 hours, take those dollars, see what you can do, how many kids can you serve with your dollars for 16 hours, and then are we going to get the results out of that? And the research would say that we would, that, you know, those kids will then be ready to be successful when they get to school.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Clark,
I know that we know that around the state, different school districts, including St. Louis Park and Hopkins, have, in spite of their really good basketball team, or maybe because of, have cobbled together a variety of resources. We've talked a lot about with Louise Stoney about the layering of resources and how mm-hmm. we come to bear. So what we know is that if we're talking about meeting the standards, you know, at one point we had conversations about stars. A school program could not get the 3 stars unless they're at least 12 mm-hmm. hours, period. Mm-hmm. And so if a school district who is proud of their program, because we want to make sure that the kids are actually getting the kinds of intensity and duration that is needed. And if Arthur Reynolds was here, he would talk much longer about what is needed and how many hours and all of those things. But we know that that's what we need. So part of the challenge for all of us in front of us is making sure that we are investing our dollars wisely. We have got incredible teachers that are doing these programs, making sure that they're able to do what they know works and what is needed. And that's where we are going to be able to make some small steps forward in this bill in terms of expanding the allowances. But I can tell you from the caucus standpoint, as we've talked about this, is a pretty strong belief that we should be moving that way. And surely, if we're talking about our public programs, we want to make sure that they're at least being able to hit the minimum of what the research is showing and to get the payoff, which is why I'm advocating that we should be getting a levy target. I'm just going to keep saying that because I think that they need some more resources.
I was just visiting with Mr. Nauman that maybe we could have an amendment drafted that would say that we would encourage school readiness to offer 16 hours, but
Mr. Chair, I think that Mr. Nauman is familiar with letters and files, and we should talk about that later on.
Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Clegg, I appreciate all the work you've done on this, and I know that when a bill was introduced in the House about the 12 hours, I did get a number of phone calls from the folks in my communities who are involved with early education, and even you think of my district as not having as many children who are struggling, and yet as we've seen changes in demographics, our communities are not probably qualifying for the kinds of resources they need to serve the needs of these children, and that people are very concerned that we will maybe be providing a better program for some children, but it will be less children. And they are very concerned about that. So I think that's something that as we move forward, if there is a way that I know this is a difficult time to enhance services to those to do that, but to leave no child behind who is getting services. And that's, I think, where, you know, in visiting those programs, I have seen the involvement, and you do kind of feel then as if, well, is this child not getting any benefit from the programs that are there now? And so I just share that. They would want me to tell you that if they were here tonight, and I think they were attempting to do that, but I don't see them in the room. So,
and Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman, again, I think that all of those things are very important. We just need to be making sure as we're moving forward, and perhaps that I don't know that you really want the department to come and talk, Mr. Chair, but this was their language originally. But
if we're serious about doing the investment right, then we need to make sure that we're tooling our services to actually get the job done. And we have got so many great people. You know, I know in my district that some of the programs they offer services do meet the intensity and duration, and some don't. They've got a fabulous family literacy program that's only 8 hours a week on the child side. And what they say is, we know this actually, we can't actually call this early childhood. It's great, but it's not going to actually meet what the preschool component is. If we're serious about preschool and school readiness, you know, really had been the forebearer around the country. And we've got some incredibly creative people. Let's try to help them focus so that we can really get there. And I think we should all work together to try to figure out how we can make this work, because obviously we want to leave no child behind. Unfortunately, we're leaving many behind right now.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Clark, I know you have spent much of your career in this area, and so I do have respect for your view in this area. I have wrestled with it because I think that at this age, every child is different, and some children can't cope with the structure and intensity of an everyday whatever. And so some parents even have rearranged their schedules. Somebody will work at night, somebody will work in the day to try and also be at home with their child. So I would hate to have a situation where we are too prescriptive. So I'm more comfortable with the 12 hours from that sense, too, so that we, again, are making sure we offer our families the broadest choice in terms of care and contact with their children.
And, Mr. Chair, it's our bottom.
Senator Clark.
16 isn't probably even the right number. I'll be honest with you, and I'm okay with going to 12. You just need to know they still are going to have to make tough choices. And what we're finding around the country is there are many, many, many states that we never thought we'd be compared to, places like West Virginia, Arkansas, Oklahoma, that are actually doing well more than this with the same amount of resources that our school readiness programs get right now. And they're seeing incredible dividends from it. And where we're fighting around the country is, when given the option, parents want full day, full year, as much as they possibly can, at least wraparound services. They're fine with some of the, it's amazing. You just look at it, and it makes sense because our families are working. They're all very busy, which is part of the reason why we've got that pre-K to grade 3 idea in here. So, I mean, we can certainly change it to 12. I just want you to remember, we all need to remember, this is going to be a struggle for some of our classes, and we need to make sure that that really is the minimum. But it is the minimum. If we're going to be serious about what it takes to be effective, we probably shouldn't go any lower than that. I'll still
Senator
advocate
Sansom?
For 11 target, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So,
Senator Clark, when we're talking about this bill, I can only relate to Itasca County, high poverty, rural, and we've found, of course, that those that are most at risk is directly related to poverty. So that if you're going to what I'm kind of getting here is, are we going to give 12 hours to everybody, or to a significantly higher amount, or are we going to hit 16 and really get those people that are at risk? And I don't even have the answer to the question, but that's kind of what it gets down to. And in rural Minnesota, probably it suffers from a different type of poverty, but a lot of it involves, as do inner cities, of educating parents as much as it does children, and it is intensive, and it costs a lot of money. But when we think about As we're talking about cutting the number of hours to supposedly cover more people, I'm not sure we're hitting on what the real significance of this, and that's that the most at-risk people are in the highest poverty levels.
Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nauman did a little quick research here. And right now we have the kind of day requirements for kindergarten, but the proposal is that it would be 425 hours would be the base, sort of. And as I did some quick math, if we had 12 hours and over 36 weeks, which is the equivalent of 8 months, which is pretty much the school year, because you have the 3 months off in the summer and about 4 weeks off for various holidays during the school year, it's 432 hours. So it's as much, it's actually a little more than the kindergarten requirement that's being proposed at 12 hours a week if it's not year-round, if it follows a traditional school year. So I think that's pretty significant.
Well, Mr. Chair and
Senator Clark.
Senator Robley, I think we need to remember that statute was done a long time ago. We weren't looking at research and what kids were needing. We are seeing the kids. We all know this. If we could have our children who are most at risk not taking 3 months off over the summer, they'd be far better off, far better off. I know that, you know, the allowances, the notion of layering didn't translate quite as well as I would have liked it to have. And I know that in the Mankato area where they've been trying this out, the Head Start folks didn't get the message that they could have layered and added another classroom or two of kids. What they did instead is they added 3 more months and they went full year. And not surprisingly, they saw huge gains. So again, you know, I think we shouldn't be, I understand why you're doing that, but now I'm going to try to beat the reporter's mind that I know that you have. The question is what got put in statute a while ago, is that really the best thing for what our kids are or isn't? And, you know, I think it's interesting looking at what the possibilities are. We are talking about parents making choices and making having good opportunities. And maybe this particular number we should think a little bit more about, because I do believe, as Ms. O'Brien said, it really does boil back down to pick a number. We really can't go below. We should not go below 12 if we're serious about what the research is showing us. But then it really does depend upon how we're going to have the resources to come to bear. And some school districts will go more, and some will do the bare minimum because they can't afford to go anymore. And that's reasonable. We're all struggling with this. So I guess good today is better than perfect tomorrow. I will say that again, and certainly can go with what the will of the committee is.
I guess someone mentioned, maybe Ms. O'Brien, you mentioned that in greater Minnesota, where you have programs, I'm just trying to figure out what the impact is from 7 to 12. Is it would basically cut the program in not quite half, but...
Mr. Chair, a lot of school districts, though, in very rural communities don't have programs because they don't have enough money to have a program. So they're contracting out, or they may be partnering with others. That's why I use the Hayfield example. You can't have a program with $8,900. And that's one of our real challenges here. And part of the reason why we've got the allowances in here, I mean, if Hayfield actually could get $4,000 a pop for every kid, they could enroll in a preschool program, they'd probably be okay. But they're not okay right now.
So the number, we need to take a look at that, or maybe continue to look at it.
Sure.
So, all right. We have, thank you, Ms. O'Brien. We have a couple more people who would like to testify. Mr. Pritchard, is Pritchard here? Welcome. Please give your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I just want to come and express some concerns. I just want to first say that we believe that the best child care is a parent's raising the child and having the child in the home, and that, I think that needs to be the standard. And the concerns I have with this initiative and what I sense is kind of the focus or the assumption is that preschool early childhood programs are good for all children, and I don't think that's necessarily true. And I'm concerned about this legislation because I see, looking at different places, for instance, on the first page or first section, it says because the legislature said the goal is that all Minnesota's children will have access to child care and early learning programs outside the home. And I'm just concerned about that because I think it's incentivizing and moving in that direction in terms of encouraging children to be outside the home in many cases. There's a number of studies out there. One of them, which I think is very significant, was a study done by Berkeley and Stanford researchers. 14,000 children, and this is the finding they came up with. We find that attendance in preschool centers, even for short periods of time each week, hinders the rate at which young children develop social skills and display the motivation to engage classroom tasks. as reported by their kindergarten teachers. Our concern is that by not just targeting very disadvantaged kids, but by moving it across the board, I think we're not doing a service to our kids. There's also a quote from Edward Ziegler, who's the co-founder of Head Start. He said there is a large body of evidence indicating that there is little, if anything, to be gained by exposing middle-class children to early education. Those who argue in favor of universal preschool education ignore evidence that indicates early schooling is inappropriate for many four-year-olds and that it may even be harmful to the development. So I think we have to be cautious about encouraging and moving all children in some shape or form into early childhood programs. The second concern I have is establishment of the STAR quality rating system. I think the best analogy I can give or thought of was the controversy over the profile of learning. And I think it needs to be pointed out that whenever you set up a standard or a rating system, that drives the system. And I think that's going to be true with this rating system. It's going to drive the entire vast majority of the child care centers and institutions in a particular direction. And the concern I have is the standards that they'll be utilizing, which will in many cases, I think if you look at the early childhood indicators of progress, which as a template, I think that will move towards a more subjective and even controversial standards. These standards are not tied to academic focus, but emphasize the social and emotional material. And I think they'll bring in inherently some of the more controversial social agenda items, whether gender identity, redefining family, and other things like that. In fact, there's some language in the bill which raised concerns on that front as well. And I think this will also serve to regulate not only the public, but I think it'll move regulate the private sector. Now, it can be argued, well, this is voluntary. But I think the fact that you're tying money and referrals to embracing this rating system is going to drive more and more of the private groups under the government's umbrella of the rating system. And I'm very concerned about that because I think that leads to kind of a one-size-fits-all approach. I think also daycare centers will feel pressure. If they don't have a rating, people can say, well, you must not be a good child care center or daycare center. And so I think there's going to be pressure. In fact, the author in the House stated that in committee, that the groups will feel pressure to participate, and we're concerned about that. And I think this will also raise the cost of private daycare centers. Whenever you institute a lot of new regulations and mandates and requirements, that's going to raise the cost. And in regards to parental choice, I think this will diminish parental choice, in my view. I think what the system will do is it'll create more of a one-size-fits-all, more of a cookie-cutter approach. It's going to reduce, stifle innovation, and because everybody's going to have to conform to this one rating system. So I have concerns about that as well. I guess my view is I think in terms of early childhood programs, they should be very narrowly tailored to the most disadvantaged kids and not throw the net out wider to encourage others. I think, frankly, we should be encouraging parents to care for their kids. And yet I think the whole tenor and the focus is to, well, what can we do to bring in other kids into the more of the out-of-home care? So I think we need to empower parents and do those sorts of things. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Any questions that members have? Do you know, just Mr. Pritchard mentioned the who would be eligible for the allowances, it has equal to 46% of the state median income. Do you have any idea what that is?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we it switched over from poverty level to state median income because that is more in accordance with what child care does. And for a family of three, I'm trying to find it. Mr. Malman may know it off the top of his head.
Mr. Chair Malman. And Senator Stumpf, Mr. Chair, Senator Clark. It's not my best day. $32,169 for a family of three.
Great.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rummel.
Do we have any idea the number of families that would fall into that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, I don't, but I think that there probably are others that do, and that's a very important question. So I think we should probably get that for the committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we have Dr. Ephraim. Please give your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm a mother of three, trained as a pediatrician here as Director of Government Relations for EdWatch. We also have significant concerns about this this bill, and I'm going to just go through it basically section by section quickly. First of all, with regard to the Office of Early Learning, the government is put in charge of all children and the early learning of all children, which, as Mr. Pritchard described, is a concern. Government is also in charge of public and private child care under the Office of Early Learning and the quality rating system, which I'll talk about momentarily. There's language in there about expanding the data collection system on early learning, which is already happening through early childhood screening with significant invasive data about and questions about family habits, mental health, and medical data. And it imposes the QRS, which is not even fully studied yet and has many other problems, which some of which Mr. Pritchard alluded to. The pre-K through grade 3 section talks about requiring all-day kindergarten, even though a 2006 RAND Corporation study showed decreased math performance in fifth grade, negative attitudes towards learning, lower self-control and interpersonal skills, increased anxiety and loneliness, lower self-esteem, increased sadness and increased behavior problems compared to those who attended a half-day program. It imposes the early childhood indicators of progress, which are subjective and teach many controversial subjects such as gender identity, family structure, diversity, careers, environmentalism, the arts, and mental health, all of which have nothing to do with closing the achievement gap. It also requires the kindergarten readiness assessment, which is based on those outcomes I just described and is extremely subjective. In addition, there was testimony from a trainer for the kindergarten readiness assessment in the State Department of Education in the House a couple of years ago, and she said, "We know that 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds are very poor test takers. You know, they have their own agendas, their own personalities, their own timelines. They don't have the personal skills to sit for testing. They lack language skills to truly explain what they know. They also haven't learned social skills or social rules for test taking. So with any assessment of young children, we have to recognize the limitations of the data we have." And she mentioned specifically about the work sampling or kindergarten readiness assessment that one can wonder about the quality of the observations that the teacher did and whether the conclusions are accurate. The department says that 90 to 97% of Minnesota children are proficient or in process. Thank you very much. And the department also said and they say every year in their kindergarten readiness assessment report, because children develop and grow along a continuum with great variability, the goal of these studies is to assess children's proficiency within and across these domains and not establish whether children are ready or not for school with the use of a composite ready or not ready score. Young children develop rapidly and varying rates across the domains, and an early definitive determination of readiness can have unintended negative consequences. With regard to the QRS, it also contains that concerning language about all children and the imposition over private child care. The data isn't even back yet to justify the cost and intrusiveness. This is an enormous burden on child care providers, and they're starting to ask questions about the expense and the paperwork, as well as intrusion on their own programs. And there was eloquent testimony in the House Early Childhood Committee on by a private child care provider on that very those very issues. Parents are not asking for this kind of rating system. If you look at the Department of Human Services website and the research that they do, the surveys they've done about quality rating systems, they care about cleanliness, they care about safety, they care about cost, hours, convenience, and communication with their providers. They are not pushing the academics, and they really don't want the state involved in indoctrinating their children. With regard to the allowances, these allowances are to help poor children and those at risk of not being fully prepared for kindergarten. We would submit that kindergarten readiness is not the right criterion to be assessing, but rather long-term academic performance, such as on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, fourth grade reading, or the achievement gap. For example, New Jersey had court-ordered preschool for poor children starting in 1998. 40,000 children were enrolled by 2005-2006 school year. The number of poor children scoring below basic, meaning illiterate, on the fourth grade NAEP reading score actually increased over the same period of time. It didn't decrease. It didn't improve. Georgia and Oklahoma had huge increases in children involved in preschool with their universal programs, and they saw declines in their fourth grade NAEP reading scores and math scores over the same period. Research shows that intact families and religious involvement doesn't just improve the achievement gap, it erases it. And those are the kinds of things that we need to do via welfare reform and divorce law reform, as opposed to spending money on these kinds of programs. Research also shows that parental involvement, not government parental involvement programs, direct instruction in academic basics like phonics and traditional math do help close the achievement gap more without the preschool fade-out that occurs where any benefits that are seen from preschool fade out by second or third grade. And these are studies involving thousands of children, not just a few hundred like the Perry Preschool Project or the Chicago Parent-Child Centers. And this can all be done without spending $27 million for the allowances and quality rating system. The school readiness section 6 talks about imposing the early learning guidelines and the assessment that I've already discussed. And also it talks about having the state be involved in the social, emotional, and physical aspects and outcomes of children's lives, which we don't even do in K-12. And this is diametrically opposed to what Mr. Otis says. We do not need to be mentally screening and interfering in the mental health lives of young children. The program he mentioned, the Early Childhood Comprehensive System, says that it is to screen, to assure that, quote, all children ages birth to 5 are screened early and continuously for the presence of health, socio-emotional, or developmental needs. the state has neither the authority, the right, or the money to be doing that. And we are told that children are undertreated for mental illness, which is far from the case. There has been a 40-fold increase in bipolar treatment for children between 1994 and 2003. Antipsychotic prescriptions have gone through the roof, with 4.4 million, which is a doubling, 100% increase between 2003 and 2006, including 20,000 prescriptions for these very potent medications for children under four. More money was spent on psychiatric drugs in 2003 for kids than on antibiotics or asthma medication. We are not under-treating children for mental illness. And this over-treatment of children is especially acute for poor children, children of color, and foster children. As far as the appropriations go, I'll just say briefly on ECFE, the legislative auditor a few years ago said that these types of two-generation programs have almost no impact on children's cognitive skills. The screening, especially the mental health screening, is invasive. There's data collection on the families. Current law is not being enforced, with districts not notifying parents that screening is not mandatory. And screening can be done by private providers for middle and upper class children, and for poor kids, it can be done by Medicaid's EPSDT, which is already in place. That would save $7.4 million right there. Head Start, we spend $40 million on top of the $189.5 that we get from the federal government. There are 600 studies showing that it doesn't work, including the legislative auditor's report and a federal study that began in 2006. The Educated Parents Partnership, we don't need to be spending money to have the state tell parents how to raise their children. And the kindergarten readiness assessment, as I've already described, is a huge waste of $574,000, and has real questions about validity and reliability. EdWatch would recommend, in summary, that early childhood programs not be expanded for middle and upper class children, that educational resources should be focused on academic basics and rigor in K-12. Government efforts to help at-risk children should promote and support intact family formation and stability. Lowering the age and expanding the allowable uses and amounts for the education and earned income tax credits so that low-income single parents or parents that must work may do so at a program of their choosing. The kindergarten readiness assessment and home visiting programs should be eliminated. There should not be a mandate or a setting of statewide early childhood outcomes, and the government absolutely should not be involved in infant or early childhood mental health. The handout that I gave you, one is the EdWatch budget recommendations, and the other is research that, quote, that supports everything that I said, and I would be happy to discuss any of it in more detail with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ephraim. Any questions that members have? We have the information that you handed out, or that you provided us, we handed out. So thank you very much. And is there anyone else that would like to testify on this? Is there any other amendments that members have? The only comment I would have is on the numbers. The one that was brought up by Ms. O'Brien, and then also the fiscal numbers. Obviously, we haven't actually put our budget together and don't know exactly what is going to be in them. So with that in mind, I guess as long as you understand that We are constrained, fiscally constrained, more so this year than many years. But I think what Mr. Otis mentioned is true. I think there's a lot of support for trying to maintain some of these efforts that the legislature has undertaken. So, Senator Clark.
And Mr. Chair, I guess in contrast to what Dr. Ephraim just said, there are numerous studies that do show exactly the opposite of what she was saying. And without going into that tonight, I just think it's important for the record. There's a lot of good things. And frankly, the Oklahoma project is a good example. They've only recently gone to scale. And part of what we have to do is make sure that our first, second, and third grade curricula is realigned. And that's one of the things that we know, and we know that state has been working at, but they entirely closed the achievement gap. So what happens when they get to kindergarten, first, and second grade is also very important. And this particular bill, Mr. Chair, obviously we know we need to keep working on the resource part of it, but I think it reflects certainly where the Senate's been at with early childhood, knowing that even in the midst of hard times, if we can make a start of the difference on the early end together with parents, that we are going to end up saving money for our school districts who need it. And more importantly, those kids are going to have a really good start. And so I think we'll obviously be continuing as we're putting together the committee bill. And I don't know if you want the motion to be to have it.
It would be laid on the
table for possible inclusion.
Only one other comment I missed is that the Office of Early Learning, we will ask for a fiscal note on that too. Any other discussion? If not, Senator Clark moves that Senate File 1649 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Finance Bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Members, I want to thank you very much again for coming back and spending an evening listening to the early childhood. So, comment I would just make is that we are getting right down to the bottom of time for hearings. And actually probably would end it at this. So,
Mr. Chair, I can't hear you.
Okay. We haven't adjourned yet. So please. We are actually kind of at the end of our process of hearing legislation. And so we'll be putting things together, and it's my intent, if I can at all possible do it, to move our education bill before Easter. And so that means that in this next week we have about, I think, this next week and then Monday and Tuesday of the following week, that we would actually be done with our education finance bill by Easter, which is some people thought that's early. But if you go back 2 years ago, we actually were in finance at this time. So
and policy.
And policy, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's if you can bear with us, and we have a lot of stuff to kind of bring back before all of you and your ideas and suggestions, and then try to figure out, I'll try to lay out a plan for balancing our portion of the budget, and hopefully we can get something out of here and moving. So, members, thank you again. Committee is adjourned.
Luck with your flooding.
Yes. Yeah.